Many people involved in cleaner production have told me that it was really for them a wonderful experience because it enabled them to move out of the, same old, and do something different and try different things.
It's a pleasure for me today to talk to Ned. Actually, your name is Edward Clarence Smith, and we have the topic, the circular economy, because this is a topic which interests both of us. We have worked on that together with projects in Egypt, but also with Swiss Development Corporation. You have worked also within different places in the European Union, but also in developing countries. What image comes into your mind, what metaphor, when you hear this word circular economy, about which you are so passionate?
Yeah, I mean, I think the metaphor that comes into everybody's minds actually is circular. It's something about circularity. And I think a lot of people sort of have a vision of somehow materials or products or the things that we use somehow going around in circles. And in fact, I think a lot of people, at least initially, when they come across this topic, they think what we're really talking about is actually recycling. So circular economy for many people is just an advanced recycling economy.
Is it different for you?
Well, so I came to this in a slightly different direction. Maybe I should just say a little bit about, my journey in the environmental field. So I started in the environmental field like 40 years ago. My initial background, my initial first degree was in chemical engineering. And so, if you want, mostly looking towards industry. And so, my work often in the environmental field has been the nexus of industry. And so, if you want, yes, looking at it very much from an economic point of view, from a cost benefit point of view, I guess. And, at the very beginning, we were all talking, at least again, as far as industry was concerned, we were all just talking about, how do I put it, putting a bung in the holes, just trying to stop the leakage out of the industrial process. No emission or little emissions, little discharge, and maybe not so much waste, or at least if waste was generated, it was managed correctly.
So that a little bit
And then I
like
guess in about the mid.
little bit like reducing the damage by
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, it was not really questioning the industrial system, but it was saying, let's just make it sort of healthier, safer, cleaner. And then I guess in the like in the mid 80s, I guess, there was, and this actually started on the industrial side, there was a sort of sense of, well, hang on a minute, why are we spending so much time and money sort of, blocking the holes? Why don't we rethink this a little bit and think about how to actually reduce this, all these emissions and discharges and waste that we're generating at the source? Get rid of the problem at the source, prevent it. And in fact, I mean, I came to this in the US, and there it was very much talk. They talked about pollution prevention. This was mostly of the work that I did for UNIDO, for the United Nations Industrial Development Organization, where we were looking to help companies through service providers that we've created in the developing countries. We were helping companies to go through this process of finding where they could reduce their waste, their emissions, and so on. And then, at some point, and here I was sort of also listening to the world around me, as it were, I began to understand that there was a problem here. There was a major problem that, as economies, especially the developed economies, we were using far too many resources. And the initial idea that actually we could deal with this problem by simply being more efficient wasn't going to cut it. Yes, of course, we need to be efficient. That's still part of the equation. But there needs to be another step. And that step, I came to the conclusion, was circular economies.
What means circular economy in a nutshell? What do we mean by that? What are the main two, three elements which we have to consider when we talk about circular economy, maybe in difference to cleaner production?
Well, first thing is, we have to understand that the fundamental reason why any of us are working on circular economies is that we are looking for a way of decoupling the growth or economic development, economic growth from resource extraction, because that's the problem. The problem is that there is a lockstep correlation between economic growth and raw material extraction. So number one. Number two is, if you want the how-to, and I think you can boil that down to three things.
Mm-hmm.
We want more efficiency in the production, but also the use of our materials, which is mainly in the form of products. We want to, what I call, slow down the flow of materials in our economies, which means essentially making sure that the products that we have longer lives, remain in our economies and remain useful to us for longer than they do now. Mm. And then finally, it's recycling and reusing the materials that are already in our economies as a priority over the extraction of new virgin materials and bringing those into our economy.
Mm-hmm. So it's decoupling, it's the issue of efficiency, it's the slowdown, and this aspect of reusing material.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a summary, if I get it right.
Yes.
And we are talking about circular, but at the same time, we talk about economic development. And as a summary of our way of thinking within Mesopartner, we tackled this topic of green economic development. And often we came to this question. We want to, on the one hand, especially in a lot of developing countries where we are working, we want to promote economic development. But how can we promote that in a more sustainable way? When we looked on remanufacturing, on making reuse of materials, of maybe also redesigning products, we find different businesses, but also we find even innovation in that respect. And this need also to link towards certain research, applied research organizations, this need to experimentation with new products.
I think that's absolutely key. I mean, I think innovation is absolutely key to the transition to a circular economy. I mean, just one sort of very simple example. We cannot really believe that we can circularize our products if those products are not designed to be circular. Because if they're not designed to be circular, that will increase the difficulty of reuse, of recycling, of sharing, all these other remanufacturing. It'll increase the difficulty of those and therefore the cost, and therefore will act as barriers to the transition to a circular economy. So redesign of products is absolutely key, but it's going to be more than that. I mean, it's going to be redesign, I would say, of systems. I believe that one of the important elements of the transition to a circular economy is that we have a more service-based economy. And what I mean by that is that we have to have an economy where we are not so much selling products, industry is selling products, as it is selling the services of those products. And to do that, you need a completely different kind of system to make that economic for you. And so we're talking about, as I say, systems design, redesign. And it's not just industry that's involved here. Of course, when it comes to products, industry will be the prime mover in terms of redesigning products, because if you want, products belong initially to industry. But all along the chain in the economy, there will also need to be redesign. Distribution is a key element, between the producer and the consumer. There are many things that can happen, can be redesigned in distribution to support the transition to circular economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say even, it's perhaps extending the meaning of innovation, but even we as individual consumers, we have to begin to innovate our thinking and our way of using our product. So innovation, to my mind, is absolutely key to the whole transition to a circular economy.
I mean, I like how you mentioned it. It comes from the demand side, from a kind of innovation perspective from the consumers, but maybe also from the buyers who are buying certain products from their suppliers. But it also comes from the industry itself. I like this term of systems redesign. I just said something about this perspective on the normative approach. I mean, this is a system redesign which has very strongly normative elements. And we see that the consequences, if we are not doing it, are very also economically damaging. Now, we are working both in European countries, in industrialized countries, or more developed countries and less developed countries. But we see also that most of the damage has been produced in the last two centuries, especially from the industrialized countries. So when we support the circular economy approach, how do we make sure that we are not falling into a normative and politically conditionalized perspective towards the countries which have not really had this chance of development during the last century?
The key to circular economy is that we can actually maintain economic development while at the same time we are able to reduce our material flows. And what we're really talking about, I think, is a shift in the type of economic development that a country is having. So it's shifting away from some of the models of development that we have now to another type of model of development, which is still development, which is still economic development, but is not one which is necessarily based on the kind of high levels of raw material extraction that we have today.
Yeah. And that's where this wording of systems redesign again fits, because you have to think about redesigning that. But that means also a responsibility of all the stakeholders involved. I mean, you know our approach, where we work quite strongly with this systemic competitiveness framework, where we say if you shift a kind of development, you have to tackle the businesses, you have to tackle the consumers, but you also have to think about the supporting organizations, the services which are involved, also to be able to offer something to make this shift, but also the political framework conditions. So how do you see this in the case of a lot of countries where we are working, more countries which are on the way of development? Is it possible to start with some work at the business level without having certain political framework conditions? Or is this a task, first of all, to start with in countries which have got a proper system in place?
I mean, in an ideal world, I would say that one should start immediately at the political level, at the policy level, to begin to design the transition to a circular economy. But knowing the realities of many developing countries, I think it's actually probably more important, or it'll be more successful, let's put it that way, if one starts with the business world, with the productive side of the economy. And I say that for two reasons. First of all, I think the productive side of the economy tends to have a better understanding, a gut feeling, if you want, for materials, material flows, material needs, material supplies, and so on and so forth. And therefore has a more immediate understanding of what we're talking about. But second of all, in this highly globalized world that we have today, where many of the products that we, for instance, in the developed countries enjoy, are made in the developing countries, the work which will go on in the developed countries, the pressures which will grow in the developed countries to deal with, to do this transition to circular economy, will cascade backwards, undeniably, down supply chains. And therefore, the productive sectors in developing countries will find themselves eventually being asked, perhaps in quotations, to help in the transition towards a circular economy in the developed world. And so I think that's why we need to start there, because they will be faced with a problem and they understand material flows better than most people.
I think we see that very strongly now also with some research which we did on the European Green Deal and how this certain bias, certain large bias also in producers in Europe, in Germany, in Italy, and how they put pressure also down to their supply chains towards their suppliers from the Balkan region, from other regions. So what would be, from your perspective, 2 to 3 ways to start with such a work at the business level, involving maybe also some service providers and supporting organizations?
So I think that we are still at a stage where, especially in the developing countries, stakeholders in general in the economy, and not just businesses, have no real understanding or feel for what it is that we're talking about.
Yep.
And so I think there's the fair amount of, shall we say, awareness raising / training that needs to take place. Now that can be crafted to be more focused on the needs and expectations of businesses. But so that's the first. Then I think it's a question of working with interested companies who are actually interested in seeing what it is exactly they might be able to do in the circular economy with their products, working with them to understand what their options are.
Yep.
What are their circular economy options? And then, assuming that that gives fruit, that the company does decide that it is a good business opportunity for it, which is, you know, that's the difficult one. I mean, a lot of companies, like all of us in life, right? We're comfortable in our zone. Mm-hmm. And when we are asked to move out of our comfort zone, I mean, we hesitate. We, you know, what we know is always more comforting than what we don't. So you've got to hopefully find leaders in industry who are willing to look at that risk and take that risk and at least consider it and analyze it. And then, assuming that that goes well, again, we can support them through the relevant service institutions to do the necessary redesign, to do the necessary work, perhaps even at the political level. And this is where we can begin to bring in the political system, if you want, because I'm sure companies would find that there are barriers, institutional, policy, regulatory barriers to what they believe would be their opportunity, their options for circular economy. And so that can start a dialogue with government. And here again, we can help with that first basic awareness raising, training, and so on and so forth, to help them understand what it is exactly that we're talking about. And we can help them craft or recraft the necessary policies that need to be changed. And then once we have government, we can start looking at the consumer, because the consumer has a very important role. I wouldn't say it's a passive role, but it's not quite as active as the role that the productive sector have or the government would have. Essentially, for consumers, it's a question of the choices that they make when they at the point of sale, when they're buying products, which services. And it's also then the way that they use those products. And so we're talking really about behavioral things. And there then the government can come in with, shall we say, policies that are more in terms of educating and supporting consumers to make certain choices rather than others.
Yeah.
So start with the productive sector. Hopefully that will lead you to the government, and then hopefully that will lead you to consumers.
Yeah. And what we have also experienced is that sometimes it's good when you have got a very weak government, that it's sometimes even good to get certain buyers and their suppliers together so that they get even support also from their buyers. It means within the private sector, looking at also opportunities for better cooperation. This is especially possible where you have got not very hierarchical relationships and only market-driven relationships. Trust relationships and also certain dependency from each other's products. Right. But I like your way of also looking at these different levels, at the business level, but also at the supporting organization and the policy level. What I think we should consider is not that we are just waiting for the middle class shifting their consumer behavior. There must be a kind of market incentive coming in to really shift this mindset and the way of production also within businesses. What kind of different advantages it could take for businesses to move into this circular perspective?
Yeah. I mean, there are companies that have moved towards a transition towards circularity for their products, and not necessarily has that been pushed by policy. It's been purely market driven. I mean, I think a good example is in the industry sector that has to deal with office equipment, photocopiers, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Equipment which is relatively sophisticated, relatively complex, relatively high value. And there what you're seeing is a good number of companies have, if you want, established their own systems, essentially no longer selling their products, but they lease them, which is, I think, a key step towards moving from product to service. They lease their products. They then offer, as part of that lease, maintenance and repair facilities, which of course means you extend the life of the product. The product is more efficient also in its during use. And then they will take that product back, let's say a photocopier, they'll take it back once, for whatever reasons, you decide you no longer need it. And then they will take it through the cycles. They will make decisions about whether the product is good enough as it is to go into the secondhand market, the reuse market, or whether it's more a question of stripping it down and then using the good parts remaining to remanufacture products, or whether whatever material there is just needs to go to recycling.
And similar approaches also in car sharing, in, let's say, sharing models, huh, where you've got the service as a service, I would say, and making sure that this product is served in a way that it can be used for a long time.
Correct. I could imagine that they said to themselves, well, hang on a minute. You know, we sell the car, and then all the value of sharing, we don't get any of that because we've already sold the car. So why don't we just hang on to the car and do the sharing ourselves?
Yeah. I think we see that also even in the startup scene, in the tech startup scene, where you've got platforms where larger car producers are buying these companies or are interested in cooperation in that respect. So there's this one model or one area, the whole sharing economy, I would say. Mm. I mean, there is another area where we come back to resource efficiency. There are quite some businesses which are really very strongly resource-based, and there is a question of the costs also involved. Do you have an example here?
Well, I have an example, shall we say, slightly to the side of that. Again, actually, it's in the area of office equipment, where at least for one company, one of the driving forces for why it decided to adopt this model was that it was looking to the raw materials that it was using, and it was seeing that some of those raw materials are either from areas of geopolitical instability, so where there is a risk to their supplies, or where they see in a not so distant future that there could simply be not enough supply for global demand, and therefore the prices would go up. And so they are preparing themselves for a world where resources, virgin resources, are probably going to cost more, and they are, if you want, mining their own products to maintain, to hold on to the materials that they have, so that they are, if you want, insulated to some degree from any shocks from the outside world. I'll give you a completely different reason, but again, market-based. This is essentially Caterpillar. Now, Caterpillar has been in the remanufacturing business for quite a while. It has a remanufacturing division. You know, Caterpillar makes big and also complex equipment. And so what they do is that they, again, it's kind of leasing program. And so they'll take back their equipment. They'll remanufacture the most valuable parts, the motors, the hydraulics, and that kind of thing. And those they can then use to remanufacture new products. But remanufacturing, generally speaking, is much cheaper than manufacturing because you've already put in a lot of the effort, a lot of the cost, a lot of the value in those very first steps. And so by remanufacturing, you cut those out and you find yourself with a product that is actually cheaper than the product made with virgin materials. Now, some companies find that a problem because they say, oh my God, I'm going to cannibalize my own sales. But Caterpillar has seen this differently. It says, I can talk about two market segments, one which will go for the new equipment, and one which will go for the remanufactured equipment at lower prices, companies that normally would not buy our equipment, but which will buy our remanufactured equipment. So
that's a very interesting example. And Caterpillar has integrated that in their overall strategy. So it becomes a part of their production strategy, of the innovation strategy, also to think about how can we make sure that the design of the products can also be dismantled and then again together. I think that is a very interesting example. I think there are quite a lot of examples also from the startup scene where we could give more examples. What would be interesting for me to hear from you now, where do you see at the moment really opportunities to start with? Also from your work experience now, you have worked a long time in this area. Where do you see a good chance to really make a difference in this redesigning of systems, working with businesses and services?
Well, I think there's one area where there is a great challenge. And therefore, of course, for the entrepreneur who cracks it, great opportunities. And that is the whole area of packaging and more specifically, plastic packaging. When you go into a supermarket, which is our normal way of doing shopping as consumers, let's face it, you are faced with a whole array of packaging. Everything is in a package. Even your apples, even your grapes are in a package. So if we want to move away from single-use plastic packaging, there's an enormous potential here if we can crack the problem.
And it's not only for developing countries, because the reduction of costs is a more relevant element. It becomes possibly also an area of real innovation and opportunities within our world. Now looking, let's say, the next 10 years into the future, where do you see your main area of making a difference? I can remember that you wrote also somewhere, I'm not only passionate, but I also want to educate the next generation to save the planet. I mean, it's very much a kind of vision, but yes, in practical words, what animates us, what animates you in working for the next 10 years in this topic? Where do you see opportunities there also to make a difference maybe with your knowledge?
Mm-hmm. So I have to say, I think that I will be doing as much as possible teaching the younger generations about all of this, because at the end of the day, this is going to be their world. A circular economy will, when it happens, I'm sure it will, but when it happens, it will be their world and not mine. And so I think it's good to get them when they're young and teach them about these kinds of concepts. And I particularly like teaching or talking to non-scientists, economists, or others like that, who probably have never really had much of a scientific type education, and for whom a lot of this is really very new. And it's always very interesting to work with young people like that. because they are seeing new ideas and they get excited about them. And that's great. So, I mean, personally, as far as I'm concerned, that's where I think I would want to be going.
Mm-hmm.
Others, those of us who are involved in design, product design, have huge potential. And I know a couple of friends who are product designers who are now working a lot in the area of circular product design / green product design. I think that will be, to my mind, a growth area, and especially in the developing countries. We need to build the cadres of product designers in the developing countries, because they need to be able to, if you want, take hold of their destiny and redesign it, not just rely on product designers somewhere else doing that for them.
What we often say is we need to create these knowledge networks in these countries and in these cities and regions, because we have to have also context-related solutions for these products. And there is a need really to not only think about product design, but also this whole question of remanufacturing, the use of resources, the whole question on material use and material science also. So we need to think about this innovation perspective, but very much also in a context specific way. To a certain extent, our work is also into finding practical solutions with the colleagues on the ground.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Your mentioning of science makes me think that there's a whole other area here where there needs to be innovation, actually, and that is in the social sciences. And actually economics too, but I guess economics is a social science. I think we need to push them a little bit to start thinking about what it means in their disciplines to have circular economies. We are wanting to transform our economies in a very fundamental way. At the end of the day, we're just talking about a lot of human beings. And so we've got to think about the social and the cultural elements here too, and how that fits in. And how we can use those to help rather than hinder.
Yeah. I liked your way of how you said it also with the comfort zone. So it's a transition where everybody is somehow challenged by and needs to contribute to solutions. And back to this perspective of context relationship, we can do something in our work, we can do something in our private world, but also we can do something when we work together with others. I would like to give you the last closing remark. Ooh. How do you perceive this opportunity to promote this this new, how do you call it, redesign of systems from an optimistic perspective?
Yeah, so one of the things that I remember very clearly when I began to get be involved in cleaner production and talking with cleaner production practitioners and people who went out and worked with companies, they said there was often a marvelous moment when the people who were listening to you, you could sort of see the light bulb going on in their heads.
Uh-huh.
And they could begin to see what it is that you're talking about could apply to them and what they're doing and so on and so forth. And many people involved in cleaner production have told me that it was really, for them, a wonderful experience, because it enabled them to move out of the, you know, same old and do something different and try different things. And they found it very exciting. I personally believe that it's exactly the same thing with circular economy on a grander scale, in a way. You're sort of challenging people, but not in a negative way. You're challenging people to come up with clever ways, clever ideas of dealing with this problem. So to me, that is the key. I mean, there is a whole other thread, right, of thinking when it comes to this fundamental problem of how do we reduce the amount of materials in our economies, where, you know, they say, well, all we can do is to go for degrowth, just stop growing, actually shrink. Well, I mean, yes, of course, that would work, but it's such a pessimistic message. And I think circular economy gives a message of saying we can crack this problem, which is very fundamental. We really need to find a solution to this problem, but we can crack it in a way that will actually allow us to continue to thrive and develop.
I think that's a great message. It tackles to the creative elements of our human beings, and that also in a very much implementation-oriented and practical way. Thanks a lot, Ned. It was a very nice talk. It was a great reflection.
Absolutely. We shall be listening to each other again soon and talk about certain aspects of it.
That would be exciting. Thanks a lot, Ned, and great. Greetings to Vienna.
Thank you.